ESPN 97.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. There are jewelry stores, then there's Zadok's. KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Vasquez, beaten away by Buffon. And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Mamma mia! Winner!
Romelu Chiellini now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Punta Rica! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, should we call it a Game 7 match in the Bundesliga? Should we just hand the trophy to Bayern Munich today? They get a 1-0 victory over Borussia Dortmund. A lot of eyeballs on this one around the world and here in the United States. Joshua Kimmich with the goal near the stroke of halftime. A little bit of a chip that everybody was a little bit questionable on Roman Bürki in goal and felt this was savable. So Bayern Munich, the big result today here, kicked it off at 11:30 Central Time, 1-0 over Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund had their chances, came out very strong in this game. We'll talk about that here in the first segment. We'll take your calls at 713-780-3776. And thank you for joining us tonight. Also, did you believe that was a penalty? Did Boateng handle the hit from Haaland? Came off his arm as he was going to ground. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. 713-780-3776 or the game today. Wolfsburg absolutely annihilates Bayer Leverkusen. Eintracht Frankfurt, they get a goal from Timothy Chandler, the U.S. international, to get a draw with Freiburg. Werder Bremen, Mönchengladbach, 0-0. Two teams in a struggle. Josh Sargent playing in that one. Tomorrow we've got RB Leipzig and Hertha Berlin. All right, welcome in, everybody. Der Klassiker is over. Bayern Munich now have a big lead in the Bundesliga. Those on the front lines, thank you as always. Aaron Raybould, thank you for being behind the glass tonight, and we appreciate you stepping in. Hope your weekend was a good one. How was yours, Aaron?
It was fun. I got to see some family a little bit, and then was productive around the house on Sunday, and then went and ate a whole bunch of crawfish yesterday.
Okay, so you weren't at that pool party in Midtown with all those bozos?
No.
Okay, good. I know, I was just setting you up there. Appreciate you being behind the glass here tonight, as always, fresh off the blitz with AJ and Fred. Of course, the most important thing this past weekend was honoring those military men that gave their lives. All right, the show presented by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, 713-780-3776, show number 11 from home in a row. It's good to hear Fred and AJ and everybody back in studio. That's nice. Hope you're all being smart and safe out there. Still shaking my head at that Midtown image. Jeez, it's hard to believe when you got people going into hospitals on a daily basis, wearing masks, and trying to help people with COVID-19, that people would be that disrespectful. But it's the way of the world, I guess. Most important thing, anyway, is being smart in the end. Many are fatigued, and I don't think they can handle it. I just think people are just can't take it anymore. I'm just going to go do whatever I want to do, and I think it's a mess. Anyway, it's a soccer show, so we'll get back to soccer right now. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, hit me up there, glendavissoccer.com. A number of blogs. We did one on Tomas Muller, John Granato's favorite player. Tonight's guest, Zarek Valentin. Now, he's a Dynamo defender, but he's also the player rep for the Houston Dynamo with the Players Union. So it's going to be interesting to talk to him about players, about the potential of Orlando happening, if players are digging their heels in a bit. An amazing book was written by Katrine Clay. It's called Troutman's Journey, From Hitler Youth to FA Cup Legend. This is an amazing true story, which basically, Bert Troutman was brainwashed, was a Nazi youth at 10, 17, was fighting in World War II against the Allies, and goes on to be one of the top goalkeepers in the world, adopts England as his country, gets deprogrammed. But Tom Clare, who is the author of Forever a Babe, and you've known him on the show, has met Burt Troutman many times before he passed away a couple of years ago. This is a remarkable story. And basically, as a kid, you know, the Nazis just got a hold of him, as they did so many young men, and basically brainwashed him. Stephen Goff, he's an insider. He's with the Washington Post and is one of the leading soccer writers in the country. He's on the show as well. In fact, he set the bar in many ways, along with a number of other guys in the early years of Major League Soccer with his coverage. We're going to talk MLS, NWSL, and the return of those leagues with the man I call Goff. Miguel Farrarones is a partner. He is the CEO of Soccer Services Barcelona. They do a thing called the Econo Method. Their company has worked with clubs, individuals, coaching education. They do a variety of things. But listen to the clubs that his company has worked with. Barcelona, PSG, Pachuca, the Japanese Federation, the Asian Football Confederation. They do a lot of club identity work. So they'll go into a country like Thailand, which is still trying to develop a sort of a national playing style, and they'll work within the culture to develop that with the people that are in charge. He also works with individual stars, including Christian Pulisic. He'll talk about him tonight. Cesc Fabregas, Veronica Boquet, you remember from the Spanish women's national team, plays in the NWSL. It's going to be a really interesting interview. So a lot of great interviews tonight, kind of differing stuff here. But we're always open to trying to bring a few different topics to the table. Now, there is momentum in the return of sports. I don't think there's any question about that. You know that. I know that. There's a lot of announcements that came after the Bundesliga's first weekend in Germany. Again, for people that might be listening in tonight that maybe don't follow soccer. Sometimes I get some of Fred and AJ's listeners that come over, and I love that when they call a show or listen. The German Bundesliga is the second largest attended league in the world behind the NFL. 45,000 a game. The league is built on youth. So other leagues around the world, not only soccer leagues, but all our top leagues in the United States, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, you know, the colleges, they've had the luxury of watching the restart in Germany. And I'm sure a lot was learned. I'm sure that the leaders of these leagues in the U.S. probably got online. They probably read the blueprint of the protocol that the German clubs put together as well as, you know, if you're a Major League Baseball, you were probably watching what was happening in baseball in Asia without the return of fans. So MLS's plan is to play in Orlando at the Walt Disney Complex. But back to what I just said, it seemed like a lot of announcements came pretty rapid fire after the Bundesliga returned. The pressure of TV contracts, the pressure of getting back out there. The NBA is set to return in July. They're going to do kind of what the MLS is hoping and planning to do, and it seems like it's all systems go in Orlando at the Walt Disney Complex. The NBA is set to do the same thing in Orlando. Now, when it comes to soccer players, there are some in Major League Soccer that are very much hedging against this. MLB and the Players Union, they're working on a deal that could start baseball sooner. They're banking on spit tests, which shouldn't be a problem for baseball players. It's kind of part of the whole thing. NASCAR is leaning on masks. Temperature checks will be the norm there. The Premier League and La Liga getting set to return in June. I think La Liga June 9th. I've heard the Turkish Super League June 12th. And then college football is all over the place. It's unclear. We're hearing differing things from differing universities and colleges. You got, you know, playing college football. You had Notre Dame come out and said students are going to come back to South Bend 2 weeks early in August. You have the playing of college football likely inherently tied to the return of students on campuses. And, you know, colleges have to have dorm rooms and beds filled. The University of Michigan came out and said they're not going to have a football season unless all students are back on campus for classes. The president is Mark Schlissel, is his name, and he's going to make a decision in coming weeks. We've heard South Carolina coming back. We've heard Purdue. The commonality here, though, is that leagues are accepting that some players are going to test positive. So now the goal becomes controlling a large outbreak. So let's just say the Bundesliga had it, you know, the COVID-19 go through an entire team. That's a problem. That could shut a league down potentially. And then we all are thinking and listening and hearing about the second wave that's coming. I think even in Houston, they're saying the cases are spiking, depending on where you read and look. The Bundesliga started with the knowledge, believe me, and remember this, that some prior had tested positive. Liga MX canceled the rest of their season, but part of that, I think, is around logistics, because they usually begin in July. So they're already backing into June. The smartest thing there was just to cancel, prepare, clean the slate, start your league in July. 20 clubs in the Premier League, they're going to have to refund millions to broadcasters, even if the season gets completed. And you know the urgency to get the Premier League back. That's big. The fees to be returned, though, will be adjusted based on how often teams appear on TV. So, you know, the team that are going to pay the most are the Uniteds, the Chelseas, the Cities, you know, the bigger clubs. This has been put out publicly, though, that they're going to have to return $25.5 million. The total from the 20 teams overall is in the neighborhood of $360 million. Again, they're looking to restart in June. And that rebate's going to happen even if they complete the rest of their games. If it does not get completed, that rebate will double for teams. So that's an interesting one. 713-780-3776. All right, let's get your thoughts on Dortmund and Bayern. Watch this one today. This to me, this was the best, most competitive game we've seen since the Bundesliga got back in operation. Dortmund came out very energetic. They pushed Bayern back. I thought there was that moment where Haaland had an early chance that was kicked off the line, which I thought he was going to try to go high over a defender and Manuel Neuer, who was trying to get back in goal after coming outside his 18. And then Bayern kind of grabbed the game back a little bit after the energetic start, and it was a bit of an ebb and flow in the first half. I don't think any question. Alphonso Davies, you know, you think about him. Now, when you watch Alphonso Davies, if you're a former Vancouver Whitecaps fan, or you're a fan of Major League Soccer, and you see how this kid is performing, it's pretty remarkable. His closing speed is amazing. Still positionally, he's figuring things out, but he's growing. He put out a lot of fires in this game. Guerrero was dangerous down the left for Dortmund. Again, Dortmund had the bright start. Thorgan Hazard started over Gio Reyna. Reyna came in, got minutes later on. Dortmund looked good in transition in the beginning of this game. In fact, carved out some chances down Davies' side. Found some space there. 19th minute, Gnabry had a big chance for Bayern, and then Joshua Kimmich would chip the goalkeeper. All right, here's Thomas Müller. After the match, here's what he had to say about Bayern Munich's win today. He also speaks here about Alphonso Davies.
When Joshua did this chip, I think it was a long hang time of this ball and everybody. But I had a good feeling from the first moment because Roman Bürki is a great keeper, but one of his strengths is that he is maybe one or two steps outside of his goal because maybe he is not the longest arms. And so with this one or two steps in front, he tried to have a better angle. And Joshua saw that brilliant and was a beautiful goal. The rest of the game were maybe missed chances, but a lot of work and a lot of passion. We talk a lot from Saturday to now that this game is maybe the most important game in the next weeks and maybe the decider, and we won it. So yeah, it's a great feeling and we have to go forward, but I think it looks better than before.
Just finally, you ran a hell of a lot today. So too did Alphonso Davies, as ever. Every time that it looks like the opponent's about to score, you can kind of just hear him screaming.
Yeah, of course. Alphonso, is a player with a lot of heart and with a lot of power, with extreme power. Sometimes maybe he has not the best position on the field, but he gets the opponent when he thinks, oh, I have time, and then meep, the Roadrunner, the FC Bayern Roadrunner comes ahead and steal the ball. So I think we, as a team, we did a great performance. Maybe with the ball, not our best, but with the heart, and that's the most important thing.
Thomas, thank you.
Tomas Muller there talking about Alphonso Davies. You know, we have to save that, Aaron. Beep. Roadrunner. Bayern Roadrunner. We got to save that. Muller's a character. He played off of Lewandowski and was, you know, buzzing all over the place with Gnabry and Coman. He's an interesting guy because you really don't know where he's playing. You'll see a lineup and he's placed behind Lewandowski, but pulls himself out wide on the right a lot. He'll go back and be a part of the buildup. Sometimes he'll, you know, lay central off the last line of a defense and look for a ball at his feet coming back into midfield. But Bayern gets a very big win here today, and they do it, in the second half. I just thought they were in control. I thought at the end Dortmund made a bit of a push, had a couple of chances. But at the end of the day, Bayern Munich, you know, killed off most of the second half. Now, there was a controversial moment on Haaland's shot before he went off injured. With Boateng potentially handling a ball going to ground, there wasn't a VAR check or anything, obviously, but that occurred in the second half. A lot of people thought that was a penalty. It was not in the end of the day, and the one goal would stand. It was a little chip from Joshua Kimmich that many thought Roman Bürki could have done better with. Delaney got subbed off. Guerrero was busy. Brandt probably didn't do as much, nor did Hazard, as they have in recent games out of their 3-4-2-1. And Haaland was on his own quite a bit in this game up front. So it was a little bit difficult. But you have to wonder, as coaches, you're trying to get an edge with your training. Like, we have seen some of the Bundesliga teams come back, and you can just tell they're still in a bit of a daze, not sharp. Dortmund and Bayern, yes, they have better players, okay? We know that in a lot of cases, in a lot of areas, okay? They're the two best teams in the league, and then you throw Leipzig in there. But when you look at those two teams, they've played some of the better soccer. I know their managers are saying it's not perfect soccer, nor should it be, nor could it be. I think anybody who has any understanding of getting to your levels of sharpness as footballers and as soccer teams would understand that, which I know all of you out there do. So that was the start there. The stats at the end of this one, both teams, five on target for Dortmund, six on target for Bayern. Actually, Dortmund completing 85% of their passes, 87% for Bayern Munich, and everything looked pretty even in this game. And, of course, it comes down to a chip that, in some cases, by Kimmich, that people are going to say that Roman Bürki should have saved. That's the difference, and now it leads to a huge gap in the table now for Bayern Munich over Dortmund. They're now 7 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund. So, barring a collapse, Bayern is going to win a title again. And I don't want to sound like, it just looks like they are really now well in the pole position. Borussia Dortmund had basically said before this game, we must win this game if we're going to win the league. Now you got Leipzig and Mönchengladbach. Mönchengladbach today, a nightmare to not get points off Werder Bremen, who's 17th in the table. And Mönchengladbach is, well, they're trying to hold on to a Champions League place. And Leverkusen is now even with them. They blew a great chance today because they got absolutely blown out by Wolfsburg, 4-1. So, some kind of erratic results, some missed opportunity for people today, and some real problems. All right, when we come back, we're going to get into this interview I had with Tom Clare about The book Troutman's Journey, which he sent to me, From Hitler Youth to FA Cup Legend. It's written by Katrine Clay. But Tom Clare has met Bert Troutman, and he's got some amazing things to tell us about this guy who was a Nazi youth, and then how he's handled by the English when he comes over to play for Manchester City in England. And then, of course, Troutman says he owes it all to England. Take a break. Panama, Van Halen, goes out to a great friend, Mark Lugris, former player on the Houston Dynamos in the 80s. Take a break here. Show, as always, brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Lugris, by the way, was a good player, still involved in player development. And I stay in touch with Mark regularly through the wonders of social media. Break time. Coming back.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, they're football fans, Oasis. We bring you back with a little bit to them. Wasn't it they that said they were better than the Beatles? All right, Tom Clare is a great personal friend, battling cancer. Just has been a true inspiration to a lot of people. He's organized the Houston Soccer Community Dinner to benefit pediatric cancer here in Houston. Sent me a book in the mail. It was a book entitled Troutman's Journey, From Hitler Youth to FA Cup Legend by Katrine Clay. Troutman was a German boy, at 10 recruited by the Nazi youth. He was brainwashed. By 17, was fighting in the war for Germany in World War II. He was on the Russian front for 3 years. Then he stumbles into British territory. He's captured. He's now a POW. Ends up in England. He gets deprogrammed, plays for the German sort of POW team. People realize what a great athlete he was. He used to play a game, I think it's called Völkerball or something, which is essentially dodgeball in our country. He then gets signed by Manchester City. Now, you can imagine that. A guy that fought for the Nazis now against England, now playing in the Premier League with Manchester City. And there was a lot of throwback when this happened. Especially, tons of people, including people of the Jewish faith. He then in 1956 wins the FA Cup. He plays the last 17 minutes after a clash with a broken neck. When he goes to get his medal, he's leaning to one side, the head. Troutman goes on ultimately to say, my education, my real education at 22 years of age began in England. So here's the legendary Tom Clare, an author himself, on the times and of Bert Troutman. He also has met Troutman on a number of occasions. Here's Tom Clare in my interview earlier today.
Well, Tom, the first thing is, I know a lot of people in Houston, and especially the Houston Red Army and all the people that know you from the Kick Cancer Bank, with their probably very much wanting to know, how is Tom and Cheryl Clare doing?
Yeah, well, we're doing okay, Glenn. We've had an up and down period over the last sort of 3-4 months. The treatment's been going. Sadly, the last PET scan that I had done back in March wasn't too good, so I had to go on this very aggressive regimen of chemo, which finished last week. So Thursday I'm having another scan, and that will show us exactly where we are and what the plan will be going forward from there. But I feel good, I feel okay. The infusions take a little bit out of me, but after sort of a 72-hour period, I'm back to normal. But I'm good. I'm happy. I'm in a good frame of mind. And I'm positive and optimistic.
Well, you are an amazing example to all of us. We're talking to Tom Clare, the author of Forever a Babe. And you sent me an amazing book, which I talked about before leading into your interview here, about Bert Trautman. This is just a remarkable story. So I want you to just maybe pick it up from your connection with him, having been a Manchester United fan, him at Manchester City.
Yeah, well, you know, as a young boy, I mean, Bert came, you know, he came over from Germany as a POW. He was initially sent to Kempton Park Racecourse to a reception centre. And then from there, he ended up at a rehab unit, as they called it, up in St. Helens, which is a small town in Lancashire between Manchester and Liverpool. And it was while he was at St. Helens that he started playing soccer. The German POWs there formed a team, and there was a gentleman there who had some connections with St. Helens Town, which played in the semi-professional Lancashire combination. And instead of playing amongst themselves, this gentleman got them games against local amateur sides. And it was from there that Bernard, Bernhard as he was called, where he came to prominence, where they thought, well, this is a guy with a lot of potential. He put in some stunning performances, apparently. And then they persuaded him to join St. Helens Town. And he played, and they paid him. He got very, very friendly with the person who'd taken him to St. Helens Town and the family, and it, so much so that he ended up living with them later on. And he married the daughter. But in 1949, Frank Swift, who had been Manchester City's goalkeeper since 1932, he retired, and City were on the lookout for a goalkeeper. And it filtered through to them that there was this big German guy playing for St. Helens Town in the combination, and that they should go and look at him. So over the period of a few weeks, they sent scouts out, and the reports that went back were very, very good. But of course, the background to what it is, you've got to remember that it was only 4 years after the World War ended. And even Manchester at that time was still a sorry sight due to the bombing that had happened during that war. When it became known that City were interested in signing him, there was a lot of opposition to it. You know, various religious groups, especially the Jewish community, which was quite understandable after the Holocaust, and it wasn't very pleasant. But he signed for City in 1949, and the captain was a guy, and a wonderful lad who I got to know very well later on in his life, a guy called Eric Westwood, who was a fullback and captain of Manchester City. And when Bert arrived at Main Road, he got them all in the dressing room and he said, look, you know, this is a football team. He said, and we're a team, you know, and he said, it's one for all, and he'd be treated as everyone, you know, like we treat each other. So there was this opposition to him, but he kept very low key, and he let his performances on the field start to, you know.
So let me just stop you there, Tom. We're speaking to the noted author, Tom Clare. So he's decided at this point he doesn't want to go back to Germany.
He'd been back,
So just take me to that point where he's decided to stay in England, because this is a big part of the story.
Well, it was huge, because he was in the unit in St. Helens for 2 years, up to 1947, when they decided that they would repatriate them all. And he decided to go back home, but he'd fallen in love with the English way of life and the way people had treated him.
Yeah.
And, you know, after 2 years, a lot of the, you know, the sort of barriers had been broken down in St. Helens, and the, you know, the local community had taken to him. But he went home, and he went back to Bremen, and he didn't like it. It just didn't fit with him at all. And he decided that he would return to St. Helens. And of course, they were absolutely over the moon with it. And he went back. And as I say, when he went back, he started to live with the family of the chap who was one of the directors at St. Helens. And as I say, he ended up marrying his daughter. But just prior to that as well, before he'd gone back in 47, he'd had an affair with a young lady in St. Helens, and he'd fathered a daughter. and he never knew anything about it.
Oh.
He never knew anything about it until years and years later. But anyway, he married Margaret, the daughter of the director at St. Helens, and of course then he went to Main Road, and he kept himself very low key and let his performance.
Did the English put him through? Because he was obviously brainwashed by the Nazis to be a Nazi youth guy. Did they do any sort of like deprogramming? Yes, they did.
When he first arrived in England, they, as I say, he went to Kempton Park, where they went through an intense sort of debugging sort of thing. And even while he was at St. Helens in the rehab unit, they did the same up there. You know, they went through declassification things with him. But he took to the British way of life. That was a thing, and he took to the genuineness of the British people, and as I said, he, you know, City came for him. He took a lot of stick on opposition grounds. I mean, obviously, you know, at that time,
I would think people tried to,
you know, they didn't try to attack him, but the verbal assaults weren't nice.
Yeah,
you know, he had to put up with an awful lot, but he just kept going, let his performances on the field do the talking, and gradually, City began to build a very, very good team in the early 50s.
Let me just reset everything. We're talking to Tom Player. He's the noted author of Forever a Babe, many, many books on Manchester United, and we're talking about the legendary Bert Trautman, who was a goalkeeper for Manchester City. So this is all the time that you're growing up, and you've told me you've had numerous encounters with Bert Trautman, not only watching him,
I first, obviously, being a Manchester United supporter, I used to read about Bert in the local Saturday evening newspaper, the Football Pink, you know, about this big German goalkeeper and you know, how good he was and how great he was. And I eventually, in 1954, got to go and see him. It was the first Manchester Derby game that I'd ever seen, and it was at Main Road. It was in September of 1954, and it was a brutally hot day, as I recall it. And City actually won the game 3-2. But the difference between the two teams was Bert Trautman. He was absolutely magnificent, and from there, he just had this aura about him. And being a young kid who wanted an aspiring goalkeeper, he was different. He was different to everyone. And over the next few years, whenever I couldn't go to Old Trafford or, you know, United were away, I would go to Main Road as often as I could, and I'd stand behind the goal there and watch him. And he was one of the first goalkeepers back in those days with that big, heavy ball. Goalkeepers used to catch the ball, they'd bounce it a few times, take it to the edge of the area and lump it downfield. But Trautman wasn't like that. He'd been a very, very good basketball player when he was a youngster. And also, one of the things that did help him was when he was in the army as a paratrooper, he was very, very good at throwing grenades. And this helped him when his career took off. And what you'd see him come for crosses, and he could take the ball one-handed. And he'd come down, and from there, he'd immediately throw it to either one of the fullbacks or the wing halves and start an attack from the back. Well, that wasn't seen with goalkeepers back then. You know, but his anticipation was unbelievable. And very, very much like Schmeichel's was when Schmeichel came to United. He put the fear of God in a lot of forwards back then. But you've also got to remember that back in those days, the goalkeepers took a lot of battering from centre forwards, but his temperament was absolutely brilliant and he could look after himself. And, you know, by 1955, City had this very, very, very good team that went to two successive cup finals. And he was the first German ever to play in an English Cup final when they played Newcastle in 55, and sadly they lost 3-1. But he was back the following year when they played Birmingham City and they won 3-1, and he got his winner's medal, but also ended up with a broken neck.
Yeah, they said in the book that when he went to get his medal, Bert Trautman, that his neck was all bent out of shape when he got his medal.
You know, when you look back at the old film of that cup final, if you see when he's injured and you see Laurie Barnett, the trainer, and he's actually got hold of his head and he's turning the head, he could have killed him.
Yeah.
He could have killed him.
Been told this day and age to immobilize him and not move.
Exactly, but there was Laurie Barnett, you know, pulling his head this way and that way. Yeah. Yeah, and he was very, very unsteady on his feet. But he got through the last 20 minutes of the game, and City carried the cup, you know. And that was really the pinnacle of the time. And then he was capped for the Football League. The Germans would not play players who were in foreign countries for the national team. And that was the saddest part for him. He could never win a German international cap. But what happened, the Football League... They recognised him by selecting him as the goalkeeper in a Football League game, and they also made him captain as well. And then City tended to go downhill, and by 1962 he was coming to the end of his career back then, and he was starting to get a little bit tired of things down there. And the big sadness was that in the last game he played, he got sent off.
No.
For having a go at the referee, which was totally.
Let me say it again. We're talking to Tom Clare, the author. Tom, we got about 4 minutes, so I want two very important things. I want you to give me a minute and a half on one of your meetings with Bert Trautman.
Yeah, well, you've met in later years, I used to come across Bert at dinners at Old Trafford. He'd attend, especially. You know, and also my old school, on our school reunions, he came to one or two of the dinners there, you know, and I was able to sit and talk with him. And he was just a gentleman. He was a fascinating, fascinating man, like you said. I mean, the life he lived, it was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
He went back to Germany, actually. He went back to Germany in the late 60s, and he stayed there. He did a lot of coaching, especially with youth soccer. But I used to come across him, and we'd chat about games and about different players, just like I did with Harry Gregg back in December. But he always had time. He always had time to talk with you. You know, there was no airs and graces about him. And there he was. He was still quite an imposing figure, even in his old age, because he stood about 6'3", you know, and he was a big frame guy as well, with big hands. And, we'd go through reminiscing of games. And one of the famous ones that we always talked about was a cup tie against Newcastle United that I actually played truant from school to go and see one Wednesday afternoon. By half time, City were leading 3-0. And they ended up actually losing the game 4-3. You know, and
you were there.
It was funny talking to him over that, you know, and he said, you know, he said, but that was the way the game was back then, you know. Yeah, but great character, played with some tremendous players at City at the time, but a gentleman as well, you know, a real, real gentleman. Right. And so warm, he's remembered with so much warmth, you know, and he did suffer a little bit of personal tragedy. He lost his young son, John, when John was six. You know, John he ran out into the road after an ice cream van and got hit by a car, and that, you know, really did affect him very, very, very badly, you know. But he divorced Margaret in years later on. But then he met another wonderful lady. And he ended up, actually, living his later years out in Spain. And he died in Spain. And my great friend, who you know, Alan Fountain, he went down there, and he went down and he interviewed Bert, you know, just not many months before he died. And he was saying, you know, he said it was just such a pleasure to spend that time with him, to spend an icon, you know. But when you look at players today, and you look at, you know, the personality that Bert Trautman was, I mean, it's incomparable, you know, and what he earned out of the game. I remember asking him, you know, what was his biggest pay check at Main Road, and he told me, he said it was £22. Which, you know, you're talking about $35.
Times have changed, Tom.
Times have changed, you know. But a wonderful character, wonderful personality. Did a lot for charities as well, even back then, you know. But loved his club, you know. Never went anywhere else. When his time was up at the end, he could have gone elsewhere, but he retired. But he, you know, he one club man who led a very, very full life. And for anybody who, you know, wants to read, they should get the book. It's called Trautmann's Journey by Catherine Clay. And a wonderful, wonderful read, you know, and especially about that early life.
Yeah, I'm in the midst of it right now. It talks,
you know, I mean, people
up by the Hitler Youth, and yeah. Tom, we're on a hard break here. Yeah. We got to go, but listen, as always, tremendous insight from you. Yeah. Thank you for sending me the book.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Tom, thank you again for everything. We appreciate it. We'll have you on again real soon.
You're welcome, Glenn. I really enjoyed it.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. We're going to quickly get into the interview now with Houston Dynamo defender Zarek Valentin, who joins us now. Zarek, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for being patient with us.
Thanks for having me, Glenn. I appreciate it. How are you?
Yeah, well, I'm doing fine. I was going to ask you because you're the one with the newborn.
Just trying to get as much sleep as possible. You know how it is.
So you're doing a number of different things here, not only trying to get fit for the season and in training with the Dynamo, but you also have a newborn. You're also the Dynamo player rep with the players union, which is time consuming in itself. So how do you sort your days out with all this?
I think little Cam comes first and foremost, trying to sort out his days and his nights, most importantly. I think when he gets a good night's sleep, mommy and daddy can attack the day a little better. And then we wake up and we go to training, which has been fantastic. Obviously, it's only individualized training, but to get out there and, you know, see some smiling faces and banter a little bit with the guys and coaches has been great. I can't wait till we get into small group trainings and hopefully into some bigger groups. And then, you know, I think about a few times a week I've been on a lot of union calls trying to sort out things ranging from pay to, you know, return to play potentially in Orlando or elsewhere. So it's just a lot of conversations at this point, and hopefully they can start to get some traction here soon enough, because I think we all just want to get back on the pitch.
And by the way, we're apologizing for some of the technical difficulties here. We're talking to Zarek Valentin of the Houston Dynamo. Is Orlando a done deal? I mean, is that something that is in stone now, that this will go to Orlando and sort of a tournament format down there at Disney?
To my knowledge, nothing is completely set in stone. I think that has been one of the projected areas based on availability, and obviously links to ESPN and things like that. Obviously, the complex is big enough to house all the players and teams and staff and stuff like that. But I have not heard anything that it's been a done deal. I think people eventually would like to have it be a potential location, just because, you know, we're all eager to play. We miss it. I miss being at BBVA and obviously, you know, playing on the road and some of these tough games. But sometimes you have to make some changes when, you know, the unprecedented circumstances of the world call for such changes.
Zarek, is there also a plan, if Orlando doesn't come off, for teams to play in their own cities? I mean, could there be some regionalization, like maybe the Houston Dynamo play Dallas and Chicago and Sporting and teams that are closer to them, maybe? East Coast teams maybe hang together a little bit more. Is that also being floated out there?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a lot of conversations about being flexible. And every time we've spoken to Don in the league, flexibility is the main concern with everything, because ultimately, the pandemic at times, you know, doesn't allow us to make plans. And that's okay, because we'll be flexible, and a lot of players are willing to to do what it takes to get back on the pitch, and whether that's regionalized, whether that's a local tournament, or maybe that's even, you know, hopefully having games in market and getting, being able to get back on our pitch here in Houston. So I think that the league is open to a lot of those concepts. I don't know too much into the depth of them. I think that obviously the Orlando thing had been floated first and foremost because of the convenience of it. But as we see the decline, hopefully, and the curving of the trends, hopefully we can start to think about more local markets, because obviously there's, you know, some home field advantages that sadly we'd give up if we had to go play in different locations.
Zarek Valentin, Houston Dynamo, joining us. He's also the Dynamo player rep with the Players Union. Look, your job is to listen to your teammates too, right? To be able to transfer information to them, communicate. What's some of the feedback you get? I mean, I would have to think some players don't want to be holed up in hotels and don't want to be quarantined for that long of a time away from players. I would think there's a lot of differing ideas and thoughts from all your teammates.
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing is to try to listen to my teammates and try to find a middle ground in which we would move forward as a team. Being bilingual is a massive help, I'll tell you that, first and foremost. So being able to guy who can accurately articulate himself in English and in Spanish really helps. And I think, you know, some of the concerns I just speak about is just the length of potential time away from family. It's difficult to leave one child or two or three and a spouse at home during a pandemic. Obviously, a lot of daycares and things like that may or may not be open. So it's difficult to think that we'd have to leave our families. Obviously, our jobs are a little different than some others, and we understand that. But I think that compromise is a big word that should be focused on during a situation like this. And obviously, you know, I want to listen to my teammates and hopefully listen to the league. And if we can come to a compromise and find a, you know, a time being away during a pandemic where players and families feel comfortable and in a safe environment, then I think that's a win-win situation for everyone. And I think hopefully we're edging closer to that. So those have been a few of the big concerns that I've heard from my teammates.
Zarek Valentin joining us, not only bilingual, but you know, the other thing I would add to all the things that you're already doing is you're doing a tremendous job with the media. You've done some wonderful things with MD Anderson. You know, you're really a guy who's a mover and a shaker and is affecting things in a lot of different ways. So congratulations to you on that, because it's very refreshing to see your want and desire to be a part of a community and do more for other people, even in things that are non-soccer related. So big ups to you on that. How about pay cuts? And you know, look, it's a time where all of us, myself included, I mean, you have to think about ways of keeping relationships alive and looking more infinitely as opposed to finite. How do the players feel about that?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate that. It's always been something important to myself and my wife to try to engulf ourselves in the local community. And obviously, you know, meeting people like Albert and Kelly through the power of social media has led to, you know, what should be the start of a pretty great relationship. And that was one of the more powerful things I've ever been a part of in my life. And if you don't know exactly what I'm talking about, I think the Dynamo tweeted it out today, just being able to be there as Kelly left the hospital from her breast cancer chemos, I think, hopefully the last time. And that was powerful. But looping back to the potential pay cuts, I think that similar to what you're saying, the players are very cognizant of the climate that we're in. And, you know, these things have hit my family personally, and I think they've hit the majority of guys around the league, and we understand that this is definitely a difficult time. And all the leagues across America have taken and are either finalized the negotiations or currently in them as well. And I think that hopefully we'll get to the end of that to be able to reach an agreement with the owners to help them, you know, get some money back in their pockets and for the teams especially. So, you know, we understand that this is hitting a lot of people, and we understand the responsibility that comes with that as well. And it's never fun to talk about pay cuts, whether it's us or, you know, anybody working on any stores in Montrose or Houston. But ultimately, I think that, you know, we have to have our eyes set on the prize and the greater picture for our teams and the league as well.
Your manager, Todd Ramos, has been a very good leader in all of this. I got to think it's very difficult on him as a first-year manager, only getting two games under his belt now. And you know, coaches, the way they're having to think now has got to be exceptionally different based on all the protocol and all the other things. And then at the end of the day, they're trying to keep footballers fit, professional athletes fit. So just give us a little taste of what practice has been like and you know, how you guys get through that and maybe a little bit of insight.
Yeah, I definitely think that Tab has been handling the situation incredibly well. For a first-year coach, it's obviously very anticlimactic going into your first year, having a preseason underneath your belt, getting some good games, and then suddenly you have the rug ripped out from under you, and that's tough. But I think that our whole entire staff has taken everything very well. And to take you guys into a little bit, obviously when we come back into small individualized training, we've been working a little bit on our own. But obviously everyone comes in at different levels depending on running or biking and things along those lines. So the first few weeks was definitely, I would say, more of our cardio-focused training. I think definitely getting a nice little solid base of fitness underneath our belt. And now we've kind of moved into different aspects of fitness. So there's some longer runs. There's some shortcuts. There's some more accelerations into sprinting. And also there's a bunch of dribbling with the ball now, which is great. Fitness with the ball is always the best type of fitness, if you ask any soccer player. So I think that Paul Caffrey's done an incredible job of mixing it up and keeping it fun for the guys and keeping it light while also kicking our butts a little bit. I'll tell you what, Glenn, this heat is something special, and apparently it's only going to get worse. So,
that's right. I keep forgetting one of these you're coming from Portland.
Yeah, so this heat is definitely something interesting. I remember we woke up for a session this morning. I got there at 8, and I think, man, this is early. But I'll tell you what, training at 8:30 is completely different from doing it at 10:30, 11:00. And you know, we're all flexible, and the club's flexible, and they've obviously been doing this a lot longer than I have, and it's exciting. And I think that, you know, the more we can progress getting into small groups and hopefully full team stuff, and we get to kick each other again a little bit is all we're looking forward to.
Zarek, have you been watching some of the Bundesliga or taping it, and your thoughts kind of on just seeing some competitive football back out there?
Oh, it's great. My wife and I are trying to watch as much as possible, and I think that obviously Germany being back first is great for their league because they're in the international spotlight. I know they had record numbers on, you know, television numbers for internationally, domestically, and everything along those lines. So it's great. And obviously I think that our league can also learn a little bit in terms of ways in which we can maybe improve on that product. There was a lot of injuries in their first round of games. And I think that that may be attributed to the pace of the game, whether it's intensity or the lack of preparation in terms of the lead-in time. So I think that while there is a lot to definitely enjoy, I think we could also learn and hopefully maybe capitalize on some of the initial mistakes that league made coming in. And maybe, hopefully, I would say, MLS can have a shot at you know, giving our take on that to the American market.
Well, Zarek, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. We close the hour in big style with you. Continued success with not only getting fit, and let's get this MLS season underway in some form or fashion.
Tell me about it. But I appreciate you having me on, Glenn, as always. It's always a nice chat. We'll talk Rolling Stone soon enough.
We will again soon. We're gonna go over the whole discography of the Stones, and we'll get through that, and we'll sort that out with your brother as well. Thank you very much for coming on, Zarek.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, so there you go. It's great stuff there from Zarek Valentin. Bilingual, the guy has been exceptional with the media, and exceptional in the community as well. So a lot of good things from Zarek, and appreciate him coming on tonight. Nothing in stone yet, so we'll see what happens in Orlando, but it's supposed to be a pool-like tournament, like a World Cup. Everybody wants to get back to playing. Players like Alejandro Bedoya have come out and said that. They want to get competitive. You got to know how these guys are feeling. We'll take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk more about Major League Soccer and its start, the NWSL and its start, with the Washington Post's Stephen Goff.
It's times like these you learn to live again. It's times like these.
More talk. Less commercials. Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
We are here for you. La, 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 la.